You're listening to DraftKings Network.
On April 26th, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. Only in theaters April 26th. Rated R.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Now, Dan, what I wanted to say was never bet against Mr. Nick and Miss Terry, but I didn't get a chance.
I felt for Mike this weekend with those kinds of consequences. And Stugatz wins again, as he always does, believing in the lovable underdog, Nick Saban, and his Alabama Crimson Tide taking the polarizing position.
Nick Saban had points.
I mean, Stugatz was right, though. Why would we question Nick Saban at this point?
Well, because they have played two games this year that they won by 2 points and another they've lost, and Georgia didn't play those games.
Right.
Yeah. But I think that what we did see about Georgia is, wait a minute, you didn't have to do to Lane Kiffin what Nick Saban did. Like, you didn't have to do to Mike Leach what Nick Saban could do. You didn't play any of those games. You were playing Tennessee with a backup quarterback. Now we can look that they were playing through the soft underbelly of the SEC. It's easy to say now.
Well, no, I was saying it then.
They ain't played nobody, Dan. Who has Georgia played? UAB? South Carolina? Vanderbilt? Missouri? Charleston Southern? Dan, they ain't played nobody.
That is what Stugatz was saying all year.
Thank you. I mean,
except Kentucky, I believe that Kentucky can play with some of those upper echelon teams in the SEC.
But Kentucky doesn't have the passing attack of Alabama. You think Mr. Nick and Miss Terry are going to lose in a game against Georgia's defense where they have the best offense that Georgia has seen this season?
He is so good. There was a couple of things. First off, the defense that Alabama was playing against, Nick Saban invented it, okay? He did. He invented that defense, so he knows how to attack it. Secondly, they haven't played a quarterback like that the entire year, or four wide receivers who are that good the entire year. And if there's a weakness to that defense, it's the secondary. That's it.
There's not a quarterback like that, though. I mean, he made great plays. He made great throws. He won the Heisman Trophy. I mean, he was the favorite to win the Heisman Trophy anyway, but he won the Heisman Trophy with a performance that you will remember because you were like, oh my God, he made that defense look pedestrian. He made it so that Georgia allowed half as many points as it has allowed all season in a game. And it's not like he wasn't being rushed by athletes, Stugatz. It's just that he decided this was the game I'm also going to move. I'm going to make a lot happen in the backfield, and I'm going to be unbelievably precise. It's rare that you get those anymore, Stugatz, a night when a guy just wins the Heisman Trophy. You're just like, oh, Oh, look, what the ingredients that have to come together to make Bryce Young an underdog. Like, that's got to be the biggest dog that Alabama's been in how long? And how, in a decade?
Nick Saban was getting a tutty.
Getting 6.5 points. Nick Saban and the Heisman Trophy winner were getting, like, in retrospect, it does seem absurd.
Now, Dan, I don't know about you, but I thought that Kenneth Pickett from Pittsburgh had a phenomenal game on Saturday night when he did that fake slide, and everyone was so upset about it after
that. That was bullshit.
But it was the most athletic play I think I've ever seen.
That should not be allowed. You can't do a fake slide as a quarterback and then just stand up and run for another 30 yards.
Why can you do a fake spike like Marino did and beat the Jets, but you can't do a fake slide?
The rules are all like towards the quarterback already. Like, you got to take that away. Like, that's ridiculous.
Mr. Chris, my argument is that if you have a quarterback who is athletic enough to fake a slide, something that we have never seen before in my memory, in my recollection, you should be allowed to do
Someone's
it.
Someone's going
to
get hurt that way.
Very difficult move to make.
If that thing takes off and quarterbacks start doing that all over the place, defensive guys are just starting to.
Play to the whistle, man.
I know, this is such a great conversation, and I want to have it because I'm going to tell you how it is that I discovered this entire play that you're talking about this weekend because I had a horrific gambling weekend. And
you still had a better weekend than Mike.
Shame on you.
I think I heard you come in this morning. You just were like, damn you, Teddy Bridgewater.
I'm like, Teddy was so Teddy, you were so Teddy. Why, Teddy? I was getting 9.5.
I was naive enough to think that was genuine analysis, not gambling based.
You bet on Teddy.
I smelled it from a mile away. I was like, I know what that is.
I bet against the Chiefs. I bet getting 9.5. I bet Fangs.
Oh, wow.
And it is, I don't know what the most terrifying bet is to make in sports right now. Is it betting against Alabama?
Yes.
Is it betting against the Chiefs? Because I don't like betting against the Chiefs because at any point they could score 50 on you. And you know it. You've seen it how many times. And I'm not going to bet under in a Chiefs game. I'm just not going to do it.
Alabama getting points is the most dangerous bet anywhere in sports right now. Dan, they've been an underdog one time in the last 12 years.
So let me tell you, though, how it is that I experienced the picket play. Because I did need in that game, and this was such a bloodbath of a weekend that I got everything I needed in this game, and I still took a bath. But I needed Pittsburgh to score a lot. And early in the game, I'm looking at my phone, and all I'm watching is the game cast, and it's a big third down play, or it might be a fourth down play. And the next thing I see is Kenny, the right at the start of the game. I need high scoring, and I need Pitt. Pickett, 55-yard run. And I'm like, wait, what? I've watched this guy for 17 years in Pittsburgh. He can't.
You love that play.
Yeah, man, but I'm like,
he threw passes to Larry Fitzgerald.
I'm like, what do you mean 55-yard run? How did he? He was throwing balls against Rumpf and Philip Buchanan. He was throwing balls to Larry Fitzgerald.
That's so great.
And I'm like, how did this happen? And it's because he did the fake slide, and I'm with Chris Cody on that. You cannot allow that. You have to change that rule. Those people are everyone around them is saying safety first. You cannot climb through that loophole for a 55-yard run.
Well, Dan, I just think that I just didn't realize that this show became the Law and Order show between Tony Correnti and Kenny Pickett and Nikola Jokic.
Quarterbacks have it easy enough, all right? It's enough.
Right.
It's enough with quarterbacks.
I will say, I wonder if Kenny Pickett might be onto something, though. Like, are there other market inefficiencies with protecting quarterbacks? Because he's taking advantage of when a quarterback goes down to slide, all the defensive players are like, nope, back off.
It was athletic.
He really sold it. He just invented a move.
Like, yeah. He invented the move. Everyone backed off, and then he kept running, and there are no rules against it. The rule might change, but Kenny Pickett invented, I discovered a loophole.
Sorry we were distracted here. We just saw that bean that looks like a dick.
Oh.
My goodness, Chris Cody.
A Bick.
She's good at the Southern Southern
belt. She's getting
belt.
A lot so, better. Yeah, well,
she's got to slow it down.
Oh, no, she's good.
She's got to slow it down a little bit. I wanted to talk to both Chris's about something, Stugat. Because
about Tua turning a corner. You know what he did yesterday? He turned a corner.
Oh, stop.
A
stop
corner
it.
Was teammate right.
Not a Louie. He didn't hang a Louie.
He made it right.
He hung a Ralph.
Witty and I were texting about this. Witty was kind of like down on Tua after yesterday's game. I don't know, man. There's just something. He's definitely more confident. Maybe his completion percentage wasn't what it was in previous games yesterday. So I'm not saying he was amazing yesterday, but he just seems more confident now, which I think with a guy like Tua is important.
It's funny because that is the analysis of 5 wins. Seems more confident.
Four really bad teams.
Not only that, against Mike Glennon yesterday. Yeah. But let's backtrack for a second, because I do not want this to be an indictment of Tua, because as rational as I try to be about these things, this last 5 games of what I've seen has made me wonder, hey, wait a minute, did I call Herbert to us too fast because of what I'm about to say to you? Just what I'm about to say to you, because I heard Keyshawn Johnson this morning still criticizing or still wondering about Tua while not being able still to pronounce his name at all. Mm-hmm. And I heard in Keyshawn Johnson's analysis, ooh, that's bad analysis. He hasn't actually watched over the last month. He's not watching at the level of accuracy that's being displayed under difficult circumstances. He must not be watching what's happening with Waddle, because there is growth and this position, Stugatz, we've known he's smart. The question about him is healthy. This position, it took Breeze a couple of years, okay? Breeze was not good at the beginning, and they replaced him. They replaced him with Philip Rivers in San Diego because it takes a minute, but I don't think it could be disputed. That's elite accuracy. That is, now, I don't know about the rest of it. Is it enough? I don't know. But over the last month, it's not more confident, Chris. What you're seeing is a more accurate quarterback. He's throwing into tight windows, tight spaces, in these places where, oh, look, it's only Gesicki's hand up there, and Gesicki's 6'6", and that hand is a little higher than a defensive back that's trying to climb on his shoulder. It's not because Gesicki's open. It's just because he's throwing it to a spot.
But Chris made a good point earlier. These are against bad teams. I'm not trying to take anything away from Tua, but you have to factor in that these wins and his performances have come against bad teams. But yesterday, it was 73.2 completion percentage, which is his worst in the last 3 games. And that's really, really good.
It was not very good yesterday. I understand why you would question Glennon and the Giants and everything else. But the Dolphins, I heard Hansen say this yesterday. It surprised me. First team ever, 1-7 to 6-7. First team to ever do it. And so, of course, because we analyzed this position with winning, the conversation around Tua is going to change with the wins. And it bears noting, all bad teams.
And while the offensive line has gotten better as this season has gone on, it's still not a good offensive line. And he is still having to move around in that pocket a lot. So it's not just the accuracy. He moves, like, his mobility in the pocket is pretty impressive. I don't know. And maybe it is because he's won like 5 in a row, whatever in a row against 4 bad teams. But it's just... I don't know, man. It could just be that he's playing the Giants, but he just looks more confident out there.
Well, his short distance numbers are amazing. NFL Next Gen Stats had this interesting breakdown of his passing completion on the basis of distance. And from 0 to 9 yards, he's missed 6 passes in the last 3 weeks, 55 of 61. And their estimated points added statistic is really high in that department. I just think that when you watch the Dolphins, you get to 10 points after 3 quarters because the Dolphins defense has been incredible in this run. They have beaten the shit out of some bad offenses, but unless they're generating turnovers, the Dolphins are not getting to a high points tally. And it's because I still don't trust their ability to move the ball downfield. It's incredibly precise, but it's also incredibly short distance.
He's 8th in the NFL in QBR. He's ahead of Patrick Mahomes, guys.
But what, yeah, I think you need to listen to what Whittingham is saying, with it's a combination of the numbers combined with watching the games. Because I'm telling you, when I was listening to Keyshawn, I'm like, oh, you're just entrenched in this position. You just think what you think about Tua, and you're not watching, never mind looking at some of the advanced stats, you're not watching the windows he's throwing into to just get a touchdown against the Giants. That was labored, grinding constipation to get to the 20 again, to the 20 points against the Giants.
He's learned now, throw to Devontae Parker even when he's not open, because Devontae Parker is never open. But you throw to him anyway. Like, those things are getting better, but it's still tough sledding it's to move tortured. The ball downfield.
Even with Waddle being a more open field threat, even with Devontae Parker being what you'd want from a number two, which is please be Mike Williams. Like just be a guy who's really hard to cover, who isn't quite as fast or as good as our number one. Just be, we've asked you to be a number one through your injured body through all these years. Now just be a number two that this accurate guy can throw to, but that's got to put up, like, that's got to make you feel better than the constipation against the Giants where you're labored and you're like, this is the most Dolphins thing ever to labor against Mike Glennon.
I don't think he's where we want him to be, but he's progressed this season. Yeah. Like, I'm feeling a lot better about him than
you know,
I did.
You know, you have a base skill set. That base skill set of accuracy over short distances is enough to at least move the ball on regular occasion. The question is, can this ever become a dynamic offense with what you have? Unless they go and get some big receiver either in the draft or in free agency. Like, with what they have, this is what the offense is going to be.
What I love about that analysis is you're like, the question is, what will they be in X number of days or years? Which you can ask with Ryan Tannehill for seven straight years without answering. And I just want to remind everyone listening to this, a five-game winning streak against really bad teams, and we've gone from, hey, maybe we don't want an alleged sexual predator that just was going to nuke this guy's career five or six games ago. A month in that league is where the stakes are on a quarterback's future when he comes into the league, once you eliminate those salaries and make them small salaries. A month of football games changes the conversation around Tua, where you can say, oh, Keyshawn, you're not watching the games. You're not watching that there has been some growth here, even against bad teams, even though their offensive line really stinks. There's been some obvious growth on, do they have an accurate quarterback who is elite at accuracy?
We should mention one of those wins was against the Ravens. So it's four bad teams and the Ravens. Okay.
It was, one of the wins was against the Ravens, but the Ravens have not scored 20 points in four games or three games.
Non-important, still the Ravens.
Well, Dan, they were playing against my Steelers, and my Steelers defense is very difficult to beat.
It's such a bad character.
Terrible.
Two guys here for my friends over at Simply Safe. Springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes, and it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. I've had it in my home for many, many years. I love it. Springtime to me, we love to travel, and I love the fact that no matter where I am in the world, I can keep an eye on my home thanks to Simply Safe Home Security. Simply Safe blankets your whole home in protection. It has sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more, plus a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. Simply Safe has given me and many of my listeners real peace of mind. I want you to have it too. Get 20% off your system today when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring at simplysafe.com/DLB. That's simplysafe.com/DLB. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
Don Lebatard.
I'm going to get some golf ASMR.
Stugatz.
Oh, me.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
I really do believe that Chris Whittingham has asked the question on this Football Monday that I, Stugatz, have been trying to get answered for even longer than I've been trying to get answered whether or not the Raiders are for real.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Whittingham, I would say Chris Whittingham just posed to me a question that I have been thinking about with, I don't know, 30 or 40 years without ever discussing it with anybody or without asking anybody if what I felt was real. Chris Whittingham has asked, is the Pina Colada song a happy song or a sad song?
Huh.
I have been asking that. I like every time that song comes on. I like that song. It moves me. It's a great story. At the very end, they meet each other again, but their love is dead.
It's dead, but it's also never been more alive.
Yeah,
I know.
Because they both had intent to cheat on each other.
That's right.
But with each other.
That's right. But they now learn. What? Yes. What do you mean?
Little role play.
Hell yeah.
Stugatz, you don't know what this song is about?
No, I don't care. I don't dissect the lyrics of his song. It's a happy song. I mean,
it sounds happy.
It's about a pina colada. It's got an umbrella in it.
It's not about a pina colada. The
umbrellas are happy in a drink.
It's not. That's not. She just likes pina coladas, and that's where he knows.
Getting caught in the rain.
Yes.
I like making love at midnight.
Hell yeah.
In the dunes of the Cape.
Heck yeah.
The I don't know.
I think that's exciting. It's a little role play.
But it begins from a place of wanting to cheat on each other because you're so bored that one night you're lying in bed reading the classifieds.
And here's the thing. Even though they discover, wow, we were made for each other, they were both disappointed when they saw it was the other one that showed up at 100%. The place.
Yeah. And like, so, oh, it's you.
It's you. This stinks. Oh, we are made for each other, but our love is dead and our sex life isn't this interesting.
Right. And there's this secret interesting side of you
that you
somehow never exposed.
Yes, never.
Were you like making love at midnight? We've made love at 9 p.m. for the last 10 years.
That's late.
When did you start making love at midnight?
Just with this guy in the classifieds? This is always confusing to me. I've been confused by this since Tears of a Clown, which Smokey Robinson sang so happily. And yet I was like, well, you're in disguise, Smokey. You're not actually happy. You have the tears of a clown. Your heart is broken, but I want to dance to it.
Hey, there's so many songs that sound happy, but are deeply depressing. And I didn't discover that it's called Escape, parenthetically, the Pina Colada song, because similar to What's Up by Four Non Blondes, no one knows it as Escape. They know it as the Pina Colada song.
All right, put these on the poll. Does anyone know the Pina Colada song by its actual name, Escape or The Escape or whatever it is? And put on the poll, and I think it's an important poll question to be asking today, seriously, because I've been thinking about it for four damn decades. Right. Is that a happy song or is that a sad song? The Pina Colada song. They were going to cheat on each other, and the only thing that didn't make their marriage come apart is the happy coincidence of they both answered the same ad. That's never actually happened in the dating apps. This is not something that has ever happened except in that song, which it makes me happy every time I hear it, even though it's heartbreaking.
I think you have to think, if it's played in a movie, in what context is it played in? And I think it's more of like a sex song. I think it's played if a sex scene is happening. It's like that's where you hit it.
Because of the things that are described as
the lyrics.
Right. Like, here's how I am as a wild man or a wild woman. And so that's why it's viewed as sexy. It's like, oh, I love making love at midnight on the dunes of the Cape. This is me. This is my wild side.
don't ever do that again.
It was weird.
I don't want to talk about your wild side anymore. I don't want to see this side of you anymore. I think of you as a generic, genderless creature that has the genitals of a doll.
Can't you look at it this way, though? It's a couple discovering new things about their partner, new exciting things about their partner.
Only through the prism of wanting to cheat on each other.
Eh, so what?
The starting point is corruption. Who cares, says Stugatz. what's a little cheating among people who love each other? The least surprising thing Stugatz has ever said.
There are so many catchy little ditties about anal sex. I've been researching it. I'm like a dog with a bone on this one. Mickey? Hey, Mickey? Anal sex.
No.
What?
Actually, boys, I want it that way. Anal sex.
Wait a minute. Tell me more about this.
Inner circles.
Oh, you had it. It was Tell Me Why.
Oh, damn it. I'm sorry. Run it back. Backstreet Boys, I Want It That Way is about anal sex.
Tell me why.
That's a good joke.
Apparently, I'd do anything for love, but I won't do that.
Yeah, the big mystery is, yeah.
What is that?
Chris, what did you Google?
Anal sex songs.
Oh no.
Yeah. No. There's a whole website of 13 of them.
I'm on that too.
There's an article with 13 of them.
Inner circle.
All right, hold on. We're going to go. Hold on. 13. We're going to do this right now.
Push it.
Stop. Everyone, stop what you're doing right now. Top 13 songs about anal sex. We begin with number 13.
Wait.
Please get the fanfare.
Let's have Chris Cody deliver it.
Yes. What is the website that you went to that we are now going to crash? Be careful with what you're doing at work. Where are you, Chris Cody?
Bustle.com.
Okay. Number 13, Chris Cody.
I'm scrolling here.
No, that's okay.
Well,
take
done,
your
Chris.
Take
All right, here we go. Number 13.
All right.
Ring of Fire, Johnny Cash.
What?
Yeah, what? Now that makes sense, actually.
that is forbidden for the time. Johnny, what are you talking about? What's burning down there in the Ring of Fire? Why is it a Ring of Fire?
Number 12, Erotica, Madonna.
Obvious.
Number 11, Hurts So Good, John Mellencamp.
No! You get out of here right now.
Mellencamp.
Come on, baby.
Mellencamp.
Hurts so
Mellencamp.
Good.
Mellencamp.
Oh, my God.
Dirty old jean-wearing.
Kruger.
You freak.
Try my best to feed it to Sugats. I'm just like, hit him with a cougar.
Just yell cougar randomly.
Come on, this
is
your lane.
You just sprayed all over the place. This is your guy, Sugats. Come
on. Rewind it again.
Guy in jeans with a baseball cap in his back pocket.
John Mellencamp?
Cougar.
Number 10.
My Moon, My Man from Feist.
Cool video. Love that song. It was an Apple iPhone commercial, I believe.
Number 9.
Oh. Whole Lot of Love, Led Zeppelin.
What?
No. Really?
Get out of here.
Really?
Number 8, Other Side, Red Hot Chili Peppers.
That one yeah. Hits all the notes.
Mm-hmm.
I got to take it on the other side.
There's only one note coming from the corner of the room, which is just to say, what, every time?
We're talking about the brown note.
Number 7.
Mike mentioned it. Hey, Mickey, Tony Basil.
What? That's shocking to me. I did not know that. I loved that video as a child.
I'll even take it like a man.
It was such a happy song. It did not conjure that.
There's one scene in the music video where they pan out and you can very obviously see the soundstage that they're recording it on. It makes me so sad. And that has to be the lowest budget music video of all. It's just people doing cheerleading moves on a stage. Had to cost like $3,000.
I loved it. It was the start of the video age.
I think Black Keys had a fairly low budget one.
Oh, yeah. Just the dancing security guard.
I love that
tremendous
video.
For Lonely Boy.
Put it on the poll. Cheaper video. Oh, Mickey, You're So Fine. Is that the name of the song or it's just
Oh,
Mickey?
Hey, Mickey.
It's just Mickey, no?
Chris, where are we on
number six? Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Relax.
Don't do what? That. We all knew that one.
Mm-hmm.
We all knew that one.
Number 5.
Pull Up to the Bumper, Grace Jones.
That's a little obvious.
Grace Jones.
Come on, Grace.
This next one also.
I mean, come on, Grace.
Lyrics are, pull up to my bumper, baby, in your long black limousine. Pull up to my bumper, baby, and drive it in between.
Come on, Grace.
God. My cars have a front bumper and a back bumper.
Grace, come on.
Number 4, Knocking at Your Back Door, Deep Purple.
Come on, Deep Purple. Come on, Deep Purple. You need some subtlety in your
Number
life.
Number 3 is Meatloaf, I'd Do Anything for Love. Number 2.
Huh. I thought the
like a love ballad.
I
right?
thought that I'd Do Anything for Love, but I won't do that. I thought that was kind of left kind of unexplained.
I didn't
was
know.
It's left for the
I thought it was never discerned that it's still unknown what that is.
There are prevailing theories that say it might even be a homophobic song. Hmm. So, yes. I think we should all just agree that it's probably just butt stuff and we move on.
Okay, so we can put it on the poll at Lebatard Show. Should we just all agree that it's butt stuff and then move on? Question mark. Number 2, Chris.
Sweat, Inner Circle.
I'm looking at your big brown eyes. Looking at your big brown eyes.
This is not subtle. This is not.
Yeah, but we didn't know.
I mean, what do you mean you didn't know?
I didn't know.
Lyrics are very uncomfortable
with
this song.
I'm looking at your big brown eye.
This all went down at a different time, but there is some lyrics that make it seem like totally not cool with one party.
And number 1, previously mentioned, I can't believe the Backstreet Boys wanted it that way.
Huh.
It's just shocking, all of it. That is a shocking list. What a fine day to our live on YouTube start to our show, because there are other things that we want to talk about, but we will do nothing better than what we just did. We just blew the minds on probably 7 of those songs of a whole lot of people listening to this, maybe more. I don't even know where I put the over under, where you had never considered any of this, and here's 7 of these in your face. Stunning.
Not in your face.
Right, not in your face.
The whole.
I would say 11 of the 13 are shockers. Grace Jones is not whatever the first one was.
Shocker is a totally different thing.
Shocker is a different thing.
Yeah.
Whole nother genre of that. It's another
I'll Google that
look
now.
Look that up, too. I want to ask you guys something about yesterday, because we talked a lot about some of the things that happen in football, and it's just such a delightful insanity. The Vikings are 5-7 and in the mix, and you kind of fear their offense in the playoffs, but they keep losing, and they just lost to Dan Campbell. And Dan Campbell and the Lions, because of how they won, I think I've got this right. Maybe I've got it wrong. Stole the day yesterday because of how they won, because they were going to lose in maximum Lions fashion, because they keep getting their heart broken, because for some reason Mike Zimmer doesn't guard the goal line on fourth, and of course Goff is going to throw a short slant. It's all he can throw. McVay took that as far as he could take it and then said, never mind. And they win their first game of the season against the Vikings. And you get the Chiefs, after all our analysis, at the end of the day, Stu Gatz, the Chiefs are back. They're still confusing. You don't know why their
There's
defense.
There's still something off there.
Well, their offense isn't good, but now their defense is? Okay, fine. Very good. Weird sport. Mm-hmm. But that's where we are now. But in the middle of this, quietly, Stu Gatz, I'm beginning to wonder, do we need to change? I'm going to say something shocking here.
Okay.
Shocking.
All right. Brace yourselves.
Do we need to change the connection for eternity of it's like Montana to Rice, it's like Brady to Gronk? Because on a day that Dan Campbell gets to steal again, Tom Brady's putting up a 4-touchdown game at 44 in a season where he's about to have more 4-touchdown games than any quarterback in the sport.
Yeah.
And that's not supposed to happen that way at that age. And you see the difference in that team whenever Gronk comes back and is an unguardable polar bear that the accuracy of Brady will reward until Brady is 84 years old and wandering around the field trailing a dialysis machine.
I mean, he was 38 of 51, 368 yards, four touchdowns.
Atlanta has,
and Antonio Brown's not playing, by
Atlanta
the way.
No pass rush, okay? So that some of that was predictable, but still, my point is, we can't normalize that. We can't normalize that happening at that age on a Sunday is not one of the storylines, because Dan Campbell and everyone, like, it's not one of the things that people are talking about today. Oh, ho-hum, the Bucs are more consistent than anyone when healthy, and Antonio Brown will come back in three games, and you know what? It doesn't matter with them whether he misses it for a fake vax card or not. In three games, what will you get? Just healthy, rested Antonio Brown, ready for the playoffs.
Last week it was Fournette. I'm looking at Gronk's numbers right now. It's incredible what you're saying. I mean, perhaps you're right. I don't know if it's Montana Rice, but it's certainly in that conversation, because Gronk's having one of the best seasons he's had when you consider the amount of games he's played. He's missed a bunch of games. But in the games that he has played, he's been great, and they've been
great.
But
what I'm telling you about what the Bucs offense has been is they could lose Antonio Brown, and it doesn't matter as long as they don't lose Gronk. If they lose Gronk, it does get constipated.
Right.
When Brady loses the safety valve cheat code of I've got a trained polar bear on my side that can't be covered, Stu Gatz, because one of the touchdowns I was watching just him. On one of the touchdowns to him, I was like, oh, they've drawn this up far right. He's 6'7". Whoever they put out there, Brady's going to find the difference between 6'7" and whatever it is that's covering him. Linebacker covers it perfectly. Gronk sticks out one of his polar bear arms just enough to hold him back, and Brady throws it into the one spot where it cannot be guarded, even though it was guarded. It was guarded. That play hasn't been open. That play was not open when Brady started playing football in this league.
Right.
When Brady started playing football in this league, don't make that throw. That's not open. But it's open now because of how they perfected what it is that those two do, accuracy, where... Stu Gatz, we saw this in a playoff game between the Chiefs and this was the Chiefs and Brady, and it represents the single greatest Patriots victory I saw when they went into Kansas City and beat Kansas City. At the end of that game, the Chiefs knew what was coming. The Chiefs had it double covered. The Chiefs had it double covered with a safety who was very good. It didn't matter. Brady was throwing to a spot, and Gronk was making a catch on third and long to to be what that thing has been for more than a decade now. And I know you guys get tired of hearing it, but we cannot normalize 4 touchdowns. How many games?
Well, Dan, people are kind of numb to it.
Well,
at this
but okay,
point, no?
But let me just ask you this before you get numb to it. Kansas City, Denver last night. How many touchdown passes did it have? Baltimore, Pittsburgh yesterday. How many touchdown passes did it have? You've got multiple quarterbacks out there who aren't 44 years old, who represent the future of the sport. And in entire games, you're not getting 4 touchdown passes. I mean, you can normalize it if you want. Atlanta's got no pass rush. Big deal. You expect them. They were an 11-point favorite. They cover. You expect them to go in there and win no matter who their guys are. But don't normalize that. Like, you want to rip down LeBron at every turn. You want to rip down what it is that you're watching because you want to cut down the
expert. What are you saying? We should appreciate it more what it is?
I'm just saying marvel at it every week. You've never seen it before. It's never existed. And in the press conference for the first time for me, I don't know if it's the case for the rest of you, I saw, oh, wait, he's had work done. Like, I could see the age.
Oh, you could see it.
Where he's got the Hollywood... He's got the Hollywood plastic veneer of like, I understand you don't want to age because this is an insecure vanity. Come on, Tom. You've had your face scrubbed.
They have 3 losses. 2 of those losses came when Gronk was injured. So, I mean, you're probably right. He makes such a big difference. I just think people are so accustomed to seeing those two do it. But we should appreciate it more. I see the Brady surgery in that Bitcoin commercial. That's where I see it the most. Not a press conference, not out on the field. There is a Bitcoin commercial where he does, where he looks like he's 32. I mean, the man is 45 years old.
So you see that he looks young or it looks fake young?
It looks fake young. Yeah, fake young.
Sugats, you sold yourself short. Remember, Gronk got hurt in their first loss. He tried to play through it. Yeah, he tried to play through it. He took a very clear shot. He tried to play through it. Definitely didn't look like himself. Was forced to leave the game. And that was a good game between the two teams.
Would you consider the rest of the season? I understand that these games are super important, and we talk about how much hyperventilation and panic there is around all this stuff. And everyone's cluttered, and all the 5-7 teams are in the mix as everyone crawls all over each other, trying to, you know, survive the attrition that is the unholy, unethical collision of bodies on Sundays and Monday for our profit.
They ended a game.
I'm asking you this seriously. Do you consider just sitting Gronk some the rest of the way? Or do you need that first round?
No, man, they're fighting
But I'm just saying, Gronk healthy matters that much, Stugatz. Like that, what?
Well, I guess Tom Brady went on the road and won their games last year in the playoffs. Maybe home field advantage doesn't really matter to him anymore.
No, I'm just asking you the question of, is healthy Gronk more important than seeding when you've got that team and he's a fountain of youth, Stugatz? Because it's not, they should go into the Hall of Fame together. I'm telling you that you got to start thinking, even as Montana and Rice are going to score more touchdowns. Gronk retired for a while. They were apart. They're not the same age. If Gronk played to Jerry Rice's age with Tom Brady, he would break all of those records. He can't because he still runs down the field and you expect spark plugs and sprockets to fall all over the place.
I think it's an interesting theory and we're chewing on because this is a Tampa Bay Bucs team that made it to the Super Bowl by playing on the road.
3 games, Mike.
Until they actually randomly hosted the Super Bowl that year. But they're just a game back of the Arizona Cardinals right now. And if you want to rest Gronk, I'd throw to you guys, rest him with that bye. Get the 1 seed and give him that 1 week. He had a broken rib. Prior to that, he was looking incredibly spry for him. He was looking as fit as I'd seen him in the last few years. So I think he's certainly healed from that broken rib. Otherwise, he wouldn't be out there. They took an additional week on top of that. I'd say chase the 1 seed.
Division is done. They don't sweat going to Arizona to have a play a road playoff game. He went to Green Bay and did it last year against Aaron Rodgers. I would do it after the Bills game. They play the Bills this week, and then after that, Dan, it is Saints, Panthers, Jets, Panthers.
I mean, I guess
we're I'd consider it for sure.
I guess we're both throwing out there. Rest would be good for Gronk. I'm just saying do it by winning and getting the 1 seed.
Yes, of course. Everyone would prefer that. Yeah, but
that's one less game for him to get hurt.
I know,
Dano.
But what I'm saying to you, I'm trying to think on the front end of this. If he gets injured next week, you're going to say to me, God, what an idiot I was trying to get him to the first round bye.
Well, because that's a process versus results thing.
I consider in that sport, because of his body and because of the age that you're talking about, I consider making the risk slightly less for Gronk because it's a big difference. Gronk healthy changes. I mean,
right,
what
but
do
look
you suppose?
But Dan, look at the last 2 weeks. They've needed Gronk to win those games. Gronk has been what unlocked that. And without Antonio Brown, your slot middle of the field options are kind of limited. Godwin's been working exclusively in the slot for the most part with Antonio Brown out. He had a monster game the last game, but I think you got to trot Gronk out there without Antonio Brown because you may lose games without him.
But what if you get Brown back? Like, you don't need him for the Panthers and the Jets,
right? He's been suspended for 3 games because we haven't talked about this. He faked his vaccine card. It was proven. Bruce Arians was blustery saying, we believe in the process and our protocol, and we submitted to the league, and he was on the offensive with it. And Antonio Brown lied to everybody. And he's still on the team. Well, this is a guy that I thought was out of chances.
It's because Brady wants him on the team.
This is amazing to watch, though. This part of the power chess game, to me. Brady left Belichick, and Belichick plays another one of these important games tonight where Buffalo, you want the division? Okay, it goes through this place again. 20 years you've been. This is the organization that it goes through for 20 years. If Buffalo, you want to prove something to us. Brady wanted some control over dictating the players that he got. And the Patriots, just like the Bulls with Michael Jordan before them, are like, no, organizations win, not players. We will continue to get you the wide receivers we want. You don't need a plethora of skill position guys. We need you to just sort of caretake the game. Belichick's got it from there.
When you kind of piece this whole thing together, Gronk left first. And then Brady left New England. I don't think Gronk would have come back to play football if he had to go back to New England to
he
do it.
He wasn't going right? to. He wasn't going to. And so they took
and their... And Brady knew his importance.
So they've proven that's what happened.
Right. So they took their act on the road and proved, oh, wait a minute. Let's do it this way. Let's surround ourselves where it doesn't even matter if we can't trust our receiver with his vaccine card. Doesn't even matter if he's such a dope that he can't be trusted on anything. Let's see if we trust him on 3rd and 8 in the playoffs when he's rested because he hasn't played 6 games. And you got to cover him and Gronk. And it makes it really hard.
And Mike Evans, and Godwin, and Cameron Bray, and O.J. Howard.
Oh, no, and here, look
and out. Fournette.
And I honestly think outside of Gronk, because Gronk is a receiver, I think Godwin's their best. I think he's spectacular. He's been playing hurt all year.
I had conversations with Dominique Foxworth, who would know about these things. No, Tampa, do not sign him, Dominique was saying. You don't need him, Antonio Brown. You don't. It's a redundancy of skill sets. You don't need him. Here's why you need him. I don't trust him. And I don't trust him to be out there. But if I don't need him to be out there, if it doesn't matter whether he's out there or not, I can trust him that far.
I think Brady, oddly enough, trusts him as a football player more than any of the others, though. Maybe Gronk, because he's been together with Gronk for so long. But Brady, I think, is the only reason why he's there. And Brady, even like when he's not playing, this is going to seem like body language doctor, but like he doesn't seem like he enjoys it as much. Like he loves playing with Antonio Brown.
Oh, but
he wants him out there.
I love that Brady, as we talk about the aging process and it, just how breathtaking it is to see everyone else in that sport be mortal. No one more than Ben Roethlisberger. It's funny to see him run at this point as he tells teammates what's obvious. I can't do this anymore. I'm going to retire. That Tom Brady is still out there doing all of these absurd things with a cheat code and an organization that he now has actual power and control over. And the only thing, Stugatz, the only thing that Tom Brady needs to trust about Antonio Brown, and it's the thing that he trusts when Whittingham says, well, is it him or Gronk, are your routes precise? And he can trust him there.
Yes.
Like, are you going to be 7 yards?
One place you
gonna
can trust that.
And are you not going to drop it? Are you going to, when I hit you in the face with it, 7 yards away because I know where you're going to be, can I trust you with that? And you can trust him and Gronk with that.
His explosiveness, Antonio Brown's in particular, after taking time off, after like having it, he posts a lot of videos of him working out. And how he has that much explosiveness for a guy that got drafted late because speed was like apparently like the game speed is what jumps off. The fact that he can just explode out of breaks, it means a lot to Tom Brady, obviously. And they struggled a little bit when he wasn't out there. And they certainly struggled a little bit when Gronk and he weren't out there. It actually speaks to how loaded that roster is, because this is saying something. I don't think Tom Brady's ever had better weapons. And that's how you age. That's how an old-timer
Mike, he's
ages.
Never had better
weapons.
He had
Randy Moss. He had the best ever. Like, yeah. Or second best ever, or third
Randy,
best
it's
ever.
It's Randy Moss, like, times five, though, right? Moss and Welker,
no,
but...
No, right. But hold on, though, guys. Again, the game changed right while we were watching it. Andy had the most unstoppable polar bear in the history of that position, as they needed him to age with precise crease routes, where mm-hmm. you're just throwing the game. The whole game changed.
He had Hernandez, too.
And Brady and Gronk changed with it. That's right. Had Aaron Hernandez too at the revolution of the tight end, right? Where you're watching yesterday. I don't know if you guys are. I mean, that guy, when they interviewed him after the game, the Philadelphia Eagles tight end.
Dallas Goedert.
Yeah.
I'm going to blank on how you spell his name because it's like G-O-E-D-D-A-R-D. They interviewed him after the game, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, look at that. That's Robin Lopez looking 6'7 guy. Like, who wants to tackle that? Look at like all his pituitary glands, all his face. Like, who wants to try and go?
He's like the 15th best tight end in the league.
But that's correct because you got Waller out there, or he wasn't out there yesterday, but you got all these 6'7, 6'8 guys that make Jimmy Graham look like he's small and broken. Like
Dallas Schultz.
I mean, I know, but Goddard, it's Goddard, Schultz, it's Ertz. I feel like you
could, Dawson Knox.
I feel like you could throw to anybody in the Ertz family for 60 yards a game. Mama Ertz. Like any of the Ertz.
Should give you 6 for 60.
Any of the Ertzes, even though I know some of them aren't a tight end.
The thing, though, about Antonio Brown, and Chris Sims has talked a lot about this on God Bless Football, is Tom Brady is actually a remarkably one-read quarterback. He loves to throw to the earliest option, at least in part because he's trying to, you know, extend his career even further. He doesn't want to get hit.
Yeah, and so he gets the ball out quickly.
He gets the ball out quickly. Antonio Brown's a huge outlet for that. Like, he wants to have him out there because, look, if this pressure is getting to me, I know I can throw to Antonio Brown at a spot. I don't even have to know where he is. I know that if I throw to this spot, he's going to be there.
Such an amazing level of precision that you're watching. I would love to watch like just 1985 football now or 1995 football to see if there were back shoulder throws, or I'm just going to throw it to that exact, put a dime over there 9 yards away. And I don't need to even see whether or not Keenan Allen is over there. I'm just going to.
Like
I'm
Marino just, wasn't doing that. Though?
I don't think it was this. I couldn't have been this precise, Stugatz. The athletes are all getting bigger, stronger, and faster. Where Vea is in your face up the middle in 2.1 seconds, and you have to get rid of the ball on average in 2 seconds to your first read, or someone 360 pounds is going to eat your face.
I miss the 90s when it came to quarterback evaluation, because what's happened on Twitter is you're convinced Kirk Cousins is a bad quarterback just because he's not Tom Brady. Hey, Chris Chandler lived such a charmed life in the 1990s. No one was calling for his job. We weren't having "do you extend Jeff Blake" conversations. These guys were just solid quarterbacks that would occasionally have good games and bad games, and it wasn't like you gotta cut bait because he's not Aaron Rodgers. We're operating in a real ridiculous place right now.
Not only that, Stugatz, this is what I remember specifically about my childhood when it came to football analysis through a child's eyes. It was a normal thing to see a receiver running 6 yards past someone and the quarterback just missing the throw. Like it wasn't like you yell at your television, "You idiot, you're so inaccurate. How could you possibly?" Every deep throw. Did you see what Derek Carr did at the end of that game, hitting his receiver 60 yards away in the face on a play when it was simply known you cannot allow any receivers to get behind your secondary? He threw the ball 70 yards and hit the receiver in his face.
Is this what Pro Football Focus does? Because that's a catch in my book. That was the best throw of the season. Yeah. That was insane.
Full on crow hop too, because Derek Carr doesn't like lead the league in arm strength, so he had to do like the full like the hop and then throw.
He threw it 70 yards.
Perfect air on it. Yeah, it was ridiculous.
I happen to think he has a bigger arm than he might actually have because he's an effortless thrower.
Yeah,
and that was all effort.
But do you guys
the
realize
air on Derek Carr, man, his passes are beautiful.
But in this sport,
is he good?
It is. It's such a good question. Are they good?
In the 90s, he'd be awesome. He'd be there for 10 years.
He'd be Dan
Fouts in the 80s.
Right.
I looked up the 1997 just as a random year passing stats. There were five guys in the NFL that were above 60% completion. Everyone else is in the 50s.
Who were the five guys, just out of curiosity?
Steve Young.
Yes.
Jim Harbaugh.
Harbs.
Comeback.
Brad Johnson, Mark Brunell, and Drew Bledsoe. Brett Favre, outside looking in at 59.3.
I want you guys.
Gunslinger, though.
Analyze in that sport, who's in the hunt at 5-7, 6-7? They're all tied up together. It only matters in the case of the Dolphins, what's your schedule look like? In the case of the Titans, how injured are you really? We'll figure this all out in a month with one game samples that anyone can win on a bounce or a field goal. I want you to simply marvel at what is happening in the sport every week, that you don't know the difference between Washington and Las Vegas, but the difference on that play was, well, their receiver got into an accident that killed somebody and is now in jail. And the receiver who would have caught that in that situation with some separation couldn't be out there because the Raiders season has been torpedoed, even though they're right there in the mix. And they could be Dallas on the road on Thanksgiving by a coach who's a bigot and a wide receiver who's going to jail for a long time. And the attrition that happens in that sport through injury and everything else that happens on the field. And the Raiders are still sort of in the mix, clawing, trying to kill themselves to get, or I should say, and no joke here, or others, trying to climb all over the issues that plague football teams, and they're right in the middle with all sorts of injuries in the AFC, where Baltimore is at the top of the place when you're looking at them and saying, man, they could have lost 9 times this season. The Baltimore Ravens.
Right.
Nine games I watch where I'm like, they should lose that.
Mm-hmm. They're the 3 seed now. They're the 1 seed yesterday. They're the 3 seed today. The Patriots are now the 1 seed in the AFC.
Oh, and good luck knowing what's going to happen tonight. If you think you know what's going to happen tonight, bleep off.
And the Patriots could be the 4 seed by the end of the night.
They could be.
But
yeah.
Bleep off.
And Buffalo could be the 1 seed.
Bleep off if your analysis tonight is, I know what's going to happen, Patriots, Bills. Bleep you, man. Bleep you. You don't know anything.
I like the Bills.
You don't know shit. You don't know shit.
Okay, Alabama guys.
As a Georgia guy. Well, my point is I don't know shit either.
None of us do.
Nobody does.
We know the Cardinals are good. I feel like it's the only thing we know.
Yeah, the Cardinals are good, but they're in the playoffs. They lose. They play Tampa. You think they lose to Tampa, right?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
So,
Tampa's winning a Super Bowl.
We know Tampa's good.
Meanwhile, Jessica's over here sitting in the whole thing out because she's like, I love bowl season. Give me bowls. I don't want to talk about football.
I love bowl season. It is the best time of the year. When people sing that song, it's the most wonderful time of the year.
The singing Southern woman has some range.
It's about the Gasparilla Bowl.
Oh, UCF in Florida.
The best.
It's going to be so great, Dan.
Well, is it because of the holidays that you get excited, or is it because of that call between Mario Cristobal and Bob Stoops on what's the bowl that they're playing for that's laugh out loud funny?
Bowl. The Alamo Bowl. Oh, my God. That was tremendous.
How great is that?
Like, the tweet afterwards, they didn't take any questions from the media. You don't say.
Yeah. It was all done on Zoom. And Bob Stoops, at the very end of it, wishes Mario Cristobal the best of luck on the recruiting trail over the next couple of weeks. Mario tries to respond, but his microphone is muted. So we're all hanging on every word that he says to see if there's any inkling that he's inching towards accepting this Miami deal, and it's muted. Goodbye, everybody. Enjoy the Alamo Bowl.
Bowl season's great, Dan, because this year we might get to watch Dabo Swinney in a Cheez-It shower. We might get to see Mac Brown or Shane Beamer in a mayo shower. We might get to see the head coach of Wyoming in a French fry shower. Hell it's just the best time of the year, Dan.
Jessica, I'd like to do this in this voice. This is going to be a degree of difficulty because F1 was also hugely interesting this
Dan, weekend. It was the most craziest thing I have ever seen.
Okay, but you've got a lot of notes. I walked in there and I saw.
Feel like I should get you a fan.
Mike, I think she's going to need some help here because doing the Southern Belle in character without a fan in a place that's not air conditioned as she tries to get us updated.
Should I get you an umbrella? I know it's bad luck to open it indoors, but like a twirling
a parasol?
Umbrella.
Yes, Dan. And I would just like to state that I'm not trying to do this voice to offend any Southern woman. This is a punishment. This is me making fun of Brian Kelly. I just need to put that.
You went to school in Clemson. You're
there.
Fine. You're covered.
Who are you trying to? Who's offended?
You're from South Kakalaki.
I have family in South Carolina that are listening to this right now.
I feel like I need
probably
more care. South Carolina.
Covering her bases.
Yes, because shockingly, Brian Kelly, and incidentally, we were talking about this during a break. Jessica and a whole lot of people are like, man, Notre Dame got a lot cooler, a lot faster getting rid of Chip Kelly and bringing in that.
Brian Kelly. It's a fun.
Brian Kelly, that smoke show. Bringing
maybe
in that
he's insisted on being called Chip. Right now.
Now he's Chip.
Now,
he's from Massachusetts.
You can call me whatever you like. Just don't call me Limp for Supper.
I don't like that character at all. I don't know who that is.
I'm Hick Gold Brown, Kelly.
I don't know. You're worse than Orgeron. So what is this? He's just going to be like a swamp creature who demands to not be called.
He's got a plot of real estate all out there on the bayou.
Wait a minute. That's just Orgeron. That's
no.
That's not Brian Kelly.
No, this is Coach Kale.
Anyway, Jessica, because Brian Kelly ended up in front of LSU fans and mysteriously developed a Southern accent, and Notre Dame is like, huh, we just got more handsome, we got younger, we got cooler. They can keep their Southern fried fraud and see how that goes for them because, you know, a fake accent, that was startling to all of us. Like, where'd that come from? Why are you speaking differently?
How many times, if Brian Kelly wanted to try to recreate that entrance that Freeman had it for that first meeting as players, Brian, he could never do
never.
That.
Like, in a million like, years.
And we were making a big deal about, like, why aren't Notre Dame fans upset? Like, I would be so happy if I was a Notre Dame
Marcus
fan right
Freeman
now.
Dwarfed the amount of dap that there has been in the Notre Dame program in the last 12 years in 3 seconds of that video. Yeah. The first high five that he gives is the most aggressive high five plus hug that I have ever seen.
More charisma than Charlie Weiss?
You don't say.
Are you ready? We're gonna do an F1 minute here. Or
I thought you were.
Yeah, what happened
I
there?
You're trying to start some shit with me. Honestly, right. Are you ready? You F1.
You wanted to throw down, man.
You ready for F1 talk?
How do you want to do
Dan,
this? Because there's a degree of difficulty on you speaking quickly, Southern accent, and getting a lot of information. I think we should make a one time because of how crazy F1 is right now, and this has not happened except for the last time.
An extraordinary weekend in Saudi Arabia, Dan.
Go ahead and update
my
us.
F1 minute.
More time. Your F1 minute.
I'm trying to hype your F1 minute.
He was trying to help you.
He's trying to give you a little extra time to get your notes together.
You don't see how sad he looks behind you. Like, he was really trying to help there. I mean, Woody's all about help, you know?
So am I doing it in my Southern accent?
Yes.
Yes, but go slow because we've established the Southern accent is better as molasses. We're going to make a one-time reprieve. There's a lot here in F1. It doesn't have to be a minute this time. You can just take your time. I don't want you rushing through this. It's going to be a bad listen if you have to rush through it.
I do think I can do it in a minute, Dan. I made some notes. I think I'm ready, but we'll time me, see how long it takes. Are we ready to go? Okay, so it all started in quali this week. Verstappen crashed on the last turn in Q3, and so Hamilton takes pole. And the standings are Hamilton, Bottas, and Verstappen. The first race is at the circuit, and this is a fast, narrow circuit. It has walls. It's like Monaco, but it's faster, and there's overtaking here. So there was a big crash there on the F2 race on Saturday. So people were nervous that this was going to be a little bit of a crazy race, Dan. So lights out on Sunday. Lewis Hamilton keeps the lead around turn one. Turn one was the tricky part. Everyone knew that if Lewis could get ahead out turn one, he might have a good chance to put some distance between him and Verstappen and win this race. So Lewis and Bottas are leading the group, and Lewis gets ahead. So at lap 10, Mick Schumacher crashes into the wall, Dan. Big crash. And there's a safety car. Lewis and Bottas pit. Verstappen stays out, and he takes the lead. So Lewis and Bottas are banking on the fact that Verstappen's going to have to stop later, and they're going to get the lead back. So now there's a red flag because they got to fix that wall that Schumacher...
A literal red flag?
You got your hand on your hip like you're trimming the palmetto trees out there when it's hot and soggy in the bayou over here at Louisiana State University, where we're all family.
I like that.
And there's a red flag ordered. Someone ordered the code Red Dan from Red Bull. And so they have to go clean the debris and fix the wall. And Verstappen gets to pit, and he's keeping the lead. So that's bad for Lewis Hamilton. So the red flag helps Red Bull. There's controversy, Dan. Why did they call the red flag then? Because now Verstappen's got a pit. He's got his fresh tires. So anyways, now Verstappen's in the lead, and it's Verstappen, Hamilton, Bottas. And there's lights out. So standing start. Verstappen takes the lead, but he went off the track to get it. Verstappen, Ocon, and Hamilton now are in the lead, but there's a crash. Sergio Perez and Nikita Mazepin, they're out. George Russell, he's out. Red flag. Again, Dan, another stoppage. Race control asked Verstappen to give his spot back to Hamilton because he cut in front of Hamilton off track. Verstappen and Red Bull are like, well, maybe we'll do that, but why is there even a discussion in the first place? If you're race control, just tell them what to do. You control the race. Anyways, Red Bull agrees, and more controversy happens afterwards. The new start is Ocon, Hamilton, and Verstappen. Lights out again, Dan. Another standing start. Verstappen takes the lead from third. 35 laps remaining. Hamilton overtakes Ocon. Now it's Verstappen, Hamilton, Ocon. Verstappen is told to let Lewis back past him because Verstappen went off course again to let Hamilton, or to get in front of Hamilton. So now Lewis is behind Verstappen. Verstappen's told to let Lewis go ahead. He checks his brakes, Dan, in the middle of the course, and Hamilton hits him, and he damages his front wing. Hamilton didn't know Verstappen was slowing down.
Oh, I wanted to hear the end. I
mean, hot dog.
I feel so bad for the people listening to this at 1.5.
Stugatz here for my friends over at Simply Safe. Springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes, and it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security, the only home security system I use and recommend. I've had it in my home for many, many years. I love it. Springtime to me, we love to travel. And I love the fact that no matter where I am in the world, I can keep an eye on my home thanks to Simply Safe Home Security. Simply Safe blankets your whole home in protection. It has sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more, plus a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than a dollar a day. Simply Safe has given me and many of my listeners real peace of mind. I want you to have it too. Get 20% off your system today when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring at simplysafe.com/DLB. That's simplysafe.com/DLB. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.